Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 27, The Fables, Part 3. I should mention that among the many legends about Aesop is that he died a violent death. He died, it is said, in Delphi because he was so trusted and so respected that he was an emissary for a king. And there was some kind of dispute between that king and the people of Delphi. And Aesop was said to be very ribald in his speech and sharp-tongued at times. I guess he held back a bit in his fables, but you can feel that's there. Kind of an incisive individual. So he said something insulting to the residents of Delphi, and they threw him off a mountain to his death. He wasn't the only one of the pre-Socratic philosophers or in that circle to die violently in one way or another. People did not always appreciate the beginnings of cognitive activity. You'll see this among your children in grades 6 and 7 and 8 as well. When you try to make them think, they will not always appreciate it. But it's also, I think, not insignificant, once again, that legend would have it, because there's a lot of truth in that legend, that Aesop dies in Delphi, which is the home of the Delphic Oracle. And the Oracle was, of course, one of the last of the Greeks to be able to see into the spiritual world. But at that point, it was already a state of pain and exceptionalism that this oracle would look into the steam that rose up, which was said to be where a dragon had been slain by Apollo or kind of imprisoned under the earth. And the steam would rise up, and almost it was like going into labor, a painful, agonizing experience in which the oracle would see visions and then be able to give pictures of what was to come, though they were only pictures and had to be interpreted. Here is Aesop, who's saying, in a way, we don't need that anymore. Just listen to these stories, and this will help you figure out for yourself how you need to live and what you need to do towards your fellow human beings. Well, the whole identity of Delphi was postulated on this old, what Steiner would call perhaps atavistic clairvoyance, and they didn't want to have any part of somebody like Aesop, this new man, this new human being, who came with very different faculties. So they did away with him, but they could not do away with the change of consciousness that he represented. Here's a story. The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. I'm actually going to read it so that you know this isn't just my interpretation or my version. A wolf resolved to disguise himself in order that he might prey upon a flock of sheep without fear of detection. So he clothed himself in a sheepskin and slipped among the sheep when they were out at pasture. He completely deceived the shepherd, and when the flock was penned for the night, he was shut in with the rest. But that very night, as it happened, the shepherd, requiring a supply of mutton for the table, laid hands on the wolf in mistake for a sheep and killed him with his knife on the spot. There's the story. The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. How many times in your life have you heard that expression? How many times have you used that expression? You're probably going to use it maybe, you know, when your kids are being overly exposed to the media or advertising or whatever, and you may want to use that phrase as an example. How many billions, maybe trillions of times has that expression been used since Aesop first told this tale? It's just one of the tropes, one of the bits of accepted wisdom. You know, don't trust a wolf in sheep's clothing, or beware of the wolf in sheep's clothing. But what's most astonishing about this is, how long did that story take? A moment. It is short. Now, it's a one-paragraph story, and some of Aesop's stories are two or even three paragraphs, but actually most of them are not much longer than that one. That is astonishing. These are some of the shortest stories ever written, and I can tell you that great masters like Leo Tolstoy spent a lot of time in their later years trying to write stories as terse and to the point and laconic and brilliant and masterful as Aesop, and even Tolstoy didn't always succeed, though he certainly came very close. So that is very important. The stories about the saints, by and large, are like chapter books. You probably are going to have to spread them out, maybe, you know, Monday and Tuesday, or Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, perhaps. The story of St. Francis, you may want to spend 2 weeks or a whole block on that story. So that's one kind of approach. But here in Aesop, we have stories that are like little jewels, little points of light. You don't need much. You only need one candle to shed tremendous light throughout a room. And so it is with these stories. And aren't you glad that you don't have two long kinds of stories to work with? But these are stories that I urge you to commit to memory. Try to be walking around with 20 or more of these stories accessible to you in your random access memory rather than your read-only memory, so that you can draw them out, so that you can use them, if need be, as pedagogical stories, because often you will find in grade two that events transpire which can be met wonderfully by one or another fable. And you may read that fable a few days after the event and think, oh, if only I had had that. So this summer, try to make these fables your bread and butter, just something that you live with and know. And because they have been translated and retranslated and, you know, been in so many thousands of languages over the course of the centuries that they've been around, you don't have to worry about being exact. It's not so much word for word as you're told you should do it in fairy tales, even though that too is really absurd. But you have much greater freedom. Though certainly it's nice if you can try to hone to this sort of 18th or 19th century version that I have. A wolf resolved to disguise himself in order that he might prey upon a flock of sheep without fear of detection. Much nicer than, you know, the wolf wanted to sneak in and look like a sheep. You could say that basically conveys the same thing. But to start to use words that are a little bit above the children's heads, you know, the word prey, to pray to God or to prey upon a flock. Very different word, different spelling, different vowel. You could work with that when you're working with the children in phonetics, for example. So he clothed himself in a sheepskin and slipped among the sheep when they were out at pasture. Not just when the sheep were in the pasture, but they were out at pasture. So the older translations, and you'll find this in some of the saint stories you'll read as well, they will give you opportunity to use wonderful turns of speech. And if you bring this to the children's attention and perhaps write them on the board, they will like this. They'll enjoy this. Now they're starting to recognize that you can do things with speech, just as they know when they're outside and they don't think a teacher is around. They can try out some pretty unseemly turns of speech or find ways of using words to hurt one another's feelings or to rally around the group that's led by the choleric child or something like that. So speech becomes an important factor that you want to bring a little bit more to the children's consciousness. And the fables can be very helpful here. Here's another short story. Not quite as well known, but nonetheless very good for children to hear. The Dog in the Manger. Another expression you've probably heard and maybe have wondered, yeah, so what about the dog in the manger? Well, here's what it's about. A dog was lying in a manger on the hay, which had been put there for the cattle. And when they came and tried to eat, he growled and snapped at them and wouldn't let them get at their food. What a selfish beast, said one of the cattle to his companions. He can't eat himself, and yet he won't let those eat who can. That's the story. That's the dog in the manger. Now, it's very interesting. Here's somebody who has clearly observed dogs, because we know dogs are territorial. They sort of stake out their turf, or they make something that isn't their turf at all, their turf in various ways. They make it their turf, and then they won't let anyone near it. They're very possessive animals, though they can, of course, be extremely selfless in many ways towards their master. But towards other animals, dogs are incredibly possessive. And it's about food. Food which the dog can't eat but won't let others have it. Can't you imagine a little lunchroom, lunchtime altercation that might be very amenable to being, if not solved, at least somewhat lessened by the telling of this story, which in a certain way already includes its own moral, but children might want to see it in very different ways. And there again, short, terse, and to the point. What a good model for us as Waldorf teachers when we tell any story, when we have to sum up, for example, in later grades, a complicated historical encounter during the Hundred Years' War, or tell a complex biography like that of Queen Elizabeth or Henry VIII, how good it is to have models like this of something that needs the greatest economy only in which to convey a very deep truth, or at least to stimulate us to think about what truth might lie in such a story. So the fables are wonderful training for us as teachers in how to say a lot with tremendous economy, something Steiner spoke of all the time, soul economy in the classroom. Here's another example of a great deal said without a lot of expenditure of verbiage. The Traveler and His Dog. A traveler was about to start on a journey, and he said to his dog, who was stretching himself by the door, "Come, what are you yawning for? Hurry up and get ready. I mean you to go with me." But the dog merely wagged his tail and said quietly, "I'm ready, master. It's you I'm waiting for." That might also be a wonderful little story for phlegmatic children. So in the next lecture, I want to share with you a story about Thales and look at some of the themes that are introduced in these stories that show a kind of awakening quality that they can have for the children. So we'll go on in the next part of Fables.